Hello and welcome to NDIS Know How, a podcast series that asks how can parents get the very best NDIS plan and sufficient funding to support their kid. This podcast is written and made by me, Melanie Dimmitt, the author of Special, and powered by HireUp, a disability support platform connecting families like mine with top-notch support workers. This is the second part of my conversation with Dr. Lisa Greck, a researcher, psychologist, and mum to Hannah, who has a rare genetic condition and intellectual disability. If you missed part one, where Lisa shares how she fiercely advocates for her daughter, who is an NDIS participant, skip on back and check it out. In this episode, Lisa talks about the issue of inequality in relation to the NDIS, a topic she's particularly passionate about, having come from a disadvantaged background herself.
I didn't do year 12, so I grew up in quite a dysfunctional family. I moved out of home when I was 13, you know, that I didn't have the opportunity to go on and sort of become educated and so forth, I think is probably, you know, it really taps into why equity and, you know, fairness is so important to me.
Lisa, it's very obvious just from listening to you, reading your writing, you're a very smart, very articulate person. You are well equipped to navigate the scheme, fight if necessary to get what your daughter needs. But this is not the case for everyone, is it?
That's right. And this is the part that frustrates me, because I know that I can get what Hannah needs, and I know that I'm able to be her advocate and to find the right bit of legislation or guideline that is going to get us what we need. But the thing that does frustrate me about NDIS, and this is, you know, been a long standing in disability services, my hope was that NDIS would solve the problem of inequity, but it hasn't solved the problem. So my hope was that it would mean that people that didn't have the fight in them, either because English was their second language, or they weren't as higher educated, or they just, you know, have a more passive personality, nobody should have to have the fight. And this is the problem with the system. You know, imagine if somebody's got very severe mental health difficulties. And as a psychologist, I see people often that they just don't have the ability to do this for themselves. And so they are left in this system of you know, potluck almost. It's like, so there's some great professionals out there that will potentially pick them up and help nurture them into getting what they need, but there's lots of people that just fall through the cracks, and that's not fair. It's not fair that I have the ability, I don't like doing it, but I have the ability, but it's not fair that the people that don't have the ability get less. My child is not any more deserving than any other child with a disability that needs, you know, services and support. Of course, they're more deserving to me, and I will go into bat for them more. But the bottom line is they're not more deserving. You know, we're in Australia. We're in a country that, you know, despite what we've been through recently and the financial situation might not be as good, we're still a relatively rich country. And so therefore, equity should be across the board. That shouldn't be based on whether you have the ability to, what I would call, fight the NDIS.
Yes. The scheme is undergoing major overhaul at the moment, as we're hearing about every day in the news. What do you think would need to change with the NDIS for there to be more equity so that no one is left behind?
A couple of things I think are really important. I do think that families that have children with children or young adults or older adults that have a person with a disability that is of a, you know, relative severeness that they can't advocate for themselves. That person can't advocate for themselves, and that might be because they have intellectual disability, mental health difficulties, or because they are dependent, they should be allocated automatically a case coordinator.
Jumping in here to clarify that case coordinators or support coordinators help people find and manage their supports.
Automatically, it just shouldn't have to be something that these families are fighting for. The other thing that I think is coupled with that is that the criteria around case coordination, and particularly the training around case coordination, needs to be improved. And so, because even if people are allocated to a case coordinator, if that case coordinator has too much of a caseload or doesn't have the right skills and knowledge, then that family is still not going to get what they need. And so I do think that it's case coordination is my big area that I would hope for improvement for families, but certainly it needs to be supported. It needs to be supported with lower caseloads so that these case coordinators can actually do their job properly. And it needs to be supported with good training, or at least some level of qualification.
Yes. And when you say case coordinator, because there are so many bloody terms in this game, is that the same as a support coordinator or a plan manager? Which one is it?
Sorry, support coordinator.
Good. Just so we clarify.
Yeah.
And gosh, you'd think, the support coordinator would have experience in the sector, experience with disability. But have you found that that's just not the case?
Look, I think that sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes there's a little bit of thinking that they know what is best for the person. Certainly I've found that with support coordinators for some of my clients. But sometimes it is simply that their caseload is so big that they don't have the time to really provide for that person, for their person. Sometimes in Hannah's case, for example, we've had very knowledgeable support coordinators, but we want a support coordinator that is actually going to take some of the load off us, off Tim and I. And so saying to a support coordinator, we really need you to go out and find blah, blah service. And then that support coordinator coming back and saying, I've found these links online, so have a look at it and see what I mean. Essentially, that's I need to do the work myself. I might as well just have done the search, online myself. So while the meaning was good, it really is that idea of, well, hang on a second, if the person didn't have my ability to search, you would need to do it. So why have we missed that step? And so I think that that's where the difficulties are. There's some great people out there, but certainly from what I've seen with support coordinators, they have very high caseloads, so they're hard to get hold of. So so I do definitely think that that's the area that needs targeting to help support families and help support equity, and because they're the bridge that can actually spend, if they're funded appropriately, spend time with the family and really get to know what the family wants and what the family needs.
As a psychologist, Lisa sees clients who are NGIS participants. I ask her how she feels the scheme is going in the area of supporting people's mental health needs.
The thing that I would say is that there is a bigger role for social work for people with NDIS. I don't know, so the thing that we see lots of in NDIS is that people get OT put in their plan, physio put in their plan, speech put in their plan, psych put in their plan. One thing that I don't see much of is social work. I'm not too sure what the rules are around that, but a lot of people with NDIS, they have, difficulties that fall into that realm. And so when I'm saying that some support coordinators are not well enough qualified, it's because we're asking support coordinators to do social work jobs in a lot of the cases. We're asking them to do things that, you know, they don't have the degree or qualification or context to do. And so that's the other thing that I would like to see in NDIS. I would like to see a bigger role for social workers, which actually frees psychologists up to do psychologists' work and social workers to do the work that they're specifically trained for.
Can you, just for those of us who don't know, including myself, I'm not too clear, what's the difference between what a psychologist and a social worker can offer?
Sure. So a psychologist might see somebody for, there's a lot of overlapping, but a psychologist might see somebody to work through emotional difficulties, to teach them coping strategies, to help them with finding their values and goals and working towards them. So a lot of the work we do, it's about working with the person as a person, as an individual, their internal self, their internal life, their value in themselves, their self-esteem, for example, the way they see themselves and the way they function in the world from that perspective. A social worker is an expert in helping people get linked into the right things they need to live in a society. And that might include, so as a psychologist, we might help somebody identify, for example, that their goals are around, you know, what improving their exercise for, let's use that as an example. However, if this is a person with a disability, when they walk out of the session, they're on their own. You know, we've had a bit of a discussion about, you know, this would be great. Why don't you do some Googling or you know, see what you can get linked in. The social worker is the person that helps link them in. And that might be helping link them in with housing, with their sports and recreation, with their developing their social network and various other things to help them live in society.
That is so good to know. And yes, like you say, I've never heard of social work being mentioned as something that people gain access to on the NDIS, and there definitely be space for that. And I'm guessing is social work cheaper than psychology to get generally?
Yeah. So it is cheaper. It probably sits somewhere in between what we're paying. You know, support coordination, I think, is about $100 an hour, and then psychology is just over $200 an hour. So social work would sit somewhere in between that. My thoughts is that, you know, social work, if support coordination was actually appropriately funded for qualified people, then it would be an attractive option for social and welfare workers.
Yes, that makes sense, and that would simplify things and be a big cost saver for the NDIS in the end.
Absolutely.
A big thank you to Lisa for this chat, and also to HireUp for supporting me in making this podcast. Want to get more tips for successfully wrangling the NDIS? HireUp runs monthly Navigating the NDIS webinars across a range of helpful topics. See the link in the show notes to find out more. I'll catch you again soon on NDIS Know How.